Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
Hundreds of childhood sexual abuse survivors filed lawsuits this week in New York courts on the start of a one-year window of opportunity for victims to seek civil action against their abusers. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt spoke to some survivors and their attorney.
My beginning started in June. Sorry.
It's all right.
1957. And it ends today.
Suzanne Robertson and her two sisters were orphans at St. Coleman's home in Watervliet in upstate New York, where she says they were routinely abused by the nuns and other staff there. When one of the sisters reported the sexual abuse to a nun at the home, she was transferred to an orphanage for mentally disabled children.
The nuns were selective in who they targeted. For me, they kept trying to break my spirit. It didn't work then, and it won't work now.
Jack Caesar says he was abused by the janitor, Eugene Hubert, at the St. Teresa of Avila School in Albany.
What happened to me changed my life and put me on a path of sexual destruction and internal hell. But the end of the cover-up stopped here.
Caesar, Robertson and her siblings, and others who say they are victims of childhood sexual abuse filed suit against the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany, claiming that the diocese knew of the abuse and did nothing to stop it. The legislation that is spurring the lawsuits, the Child Victims Act, was approved earlier this year by Governor Andrew Cuomo and the legislature. It allows victims to bring criminal charges against an alleged abuser up until they reach the age of 28, and they can initiate civil action until they are 55 years old. The one-year window allows thousands of survivors who aren't covered by the new rules and who were barred from court action in the past to bring civil lawsuits. They have from August 14, 2019, until August 13, 2020. The survivor's attorney, Dan Ellis of Herman Law Firm, says his firm has compiled a list of 500 priests across New York State who have been accused of sexual abuse.
We're hearing from hundreds of victims across the state who no longer have to suffer in silence.
Ellis's firm is one of several filing cases Wednesday. Anderson Law Firm filed 262 cases in nearly every Roman Catholic diocese in New York. The Marsh Law Firm has over 500 clients that are also filing claims against the Catholic Church, the Boy Scouts of America, and several Boy Scout councils in New York, and 200 claims against Rockefeller University Hospital over alleged abuse by Dr. Reginald Archibald. He ran a clinic there for children with growth problems. Ellis says the next step is to help his clients prove their case in court. He says that will involve the victims telling their stories to a judge and in some cases a jury, and it will also include depositions from officials in the diocese. He says they hope to uncover more evidence of sexual abuse that he believes has been hidden.
We still think that the diocese across the country are withholding files and complaints based on known perpetrators. We don't think all the records are out there. Now, the diocese have said they've turned over all of the records to the attorneys general, and that might be so, but those records aren't made public yet. And these victims have a right to know of that, and the public has a right to know, and these documents, we believe, are still secret.
The New York State Attorney General's office announced over a year ago that they had begun an investigation of sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, but so far they have not made any information public. The Catholic Church lobbied against the Child Victims Act for several years, but earlier in 2019 dropped its opposition. And many dioceses now say they support the victims and won't stand in the way of their lawsuits. The Albany Bishop, Edward Scharfenberger, released a video message.
We support all survivors in the justice and healing that they seek.
Scharfenberger says victims should not be afraid to speak truth to power. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, quite a video out on YouTube right now of Chris Cuomo, of course, the host of Primetime on CNN. He apparently, if you look at the full video, is being taunted by a man who's calling him Fredo, but claiming that he thought his name was Fredo. Well, I can't repeat the response from Chris Cuomo, but he was not happy and considered it an Italian slur.
Well, let's face it, those people who are in the public eye really can be very challenged. When they come up to you in a bar, they come up to you and say terrible, terrible things about you, your family, this or that, some of the stuff coming very close to physical threats. You have to be very, very careful not to engage them. And I get it. I know why Chris Cuomo did it. Every bone in your body wants to do something, but you don't, because all it does is give them exactly what they want.
So, in any case, Chris Cuomo came out afterwards and issued an apology, basically saying, Alan, that he shouldn't have allowed himself to be baited by these what appeared to be two men.
First of all, he's right. He was right to apologize. He was right to get rid of it. The idea that all of us are vulnerable when somebody starts to pick on us is very real. If it's the wrong moment, you should, in fact, as Mrs. Wick told me in the ninth grade or eighth grade, keep shut. It's very important not to take the bait. Chris Cuomo was there, perfectly understandable, with his wife and his child. A couple of people come up. I wanted to use another word, but I'm going to use people instead. And they start to pick on him. And instead of turning around and smiling, you know, and saying thank you very much and turning away, he took the bait and he was sorry. Hey, nobody understands it better than I do.
Hundreds of childhood sexual abuse victims sued their abusers. 427 lawsuits, Alan, were filed as a result of this window opening in the Child Victims Act. In Albany, the former bishop, Howard Hubbard, is accused as well.
You know, David, anybody can accuse anybody. The fact is that once somebody accuses you, you're damaged goods. It is unfortunate. We have known in the past that many people who really did have justifiable claims made them. We've also seen people lie. So innocent until proven guilty has a certain ring to it. I've known Howard Hubbard for years, always liked him very, very much. Interviewed him countless times on the radio and television, and he is a man who has a lot of affection in the Albany community. On the other hand, if you've done it, you've done it.
Alan, there was a story in Politico that talked about the Democratic Socialists in New York making a push to take over the unions.
Well, look, this kind of thing is going to happen. We do know New York is a progressive city in some places. Some places, not so much. Anyway, in a district, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez gets elected, and all of a sudden she becomes one of the most interesting people in America. She does a little dance outside her office, and it makes the headlines. She describes herself as a sort of a progressive socialist, and there are an awful lot of those folks in this country. However, the rank and file in the Democratic Party is hardly that. They are moderate. They're in the middle. That's how the House of Representatives, for example, changed from Republican to Democrat. So, you know, the fact that she keeps pushing and her colleagues keep pushing is to be expected. On the other hand, if the Democrats are painted by Trump and others as a socialist party, they're going to lose some votes in this country. So there are many people with instincts which are socialist in nature and within reason, and then there are people who would push the party to the left and, in many people's opinion, endanger it from winning an election.
Prisons. In light of the Jeffrey Epstein situation, of course, a federal prison, but we all know that Rikers Island, for example, is one of the worst, quote, from Governor Cuomo, prisons, if not the worst, in New York State. And the issue of the state of our prisons in New York, as well as the state of overworked prison guards.
Well, that's right. Look, Donald Trump has cut the support for federal prisons. Now, David, you have to remember something. Federal prisons are regarded as the good ones. And Rikers, a state institution, is regarded as the terror. You don't want to go to Rikers. So The fact that Epstein's suicide happened, or alleged suicide, happened in a federal prison is an eye-opener. But he's not the first. Whitey Bulger and other people who may be inconvenient for those in power somehow disappear. In the case of Jeffrey Epstein, there were an awful lot of people in this country who benefited by his death. That's all I'm going to say.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York's network of food banks has rebranded and is operating under new leadership. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas reports.
The Food Bank Association of New York State is fine-tuning its mission and outreach, starting with a name change to Feeding New York State. The Albany-based not-for-profit is forging ahead under the guidance of its new executive director, Dan Egan, a former division administrator at the New York State Department of Health. In 2015, he ran in the Democratic primary run for Albany County Executive, but was defeated by incumbent Dan McCoy. Egan says he is joining Feeding New York State at a critical time.
It's a network of 9 regional food banks with over 5,000 member agencies, and we distributed over 184 million pounds of food last year. And the reason for the name change, there are really 2 things. One is to align with Feeding America, which is the national level food bank association. There are over 200 food banks in the United States. So there's kind of a movement nationally for everyone to name their state associations in a similar way. So, you know, there's a Feeding Pennsylvania and so forth. So that was part of it, was just aligning with our brothers and sisters in other states. The other was to just align better with our mission. You know, Food Bank Association is an okay name if you know what a food bank is, and I think most people do, but Feeding New York State really better captures what we do. There's 2.3 million New Yorkers who are hungry, and that includes 1 in 6 children.
Egan adds food banks shouldn't be confused with food pantries.
A food pantry is usually a small volunteer-run operation in a town or in a community that provides food directly to people in hunger. And then the food bank is sort of the wholesale level of that. They provide the food and some other assistance to the food pantries. That was all very well established in New York State, and all the food banks are really exceptionally well-run organizations. But at the state level, I think that the association had a visibility issue. Part of what I'm doing is just knocking on a lot of doors, calling a lot of people, just letting them know that Feeding New York State exists, that we want to be a partner with farmers, with food producers, with public agencies, with private donors, to do a better job of both representing the interests of the food banks at the state level and getting more donations, sharing ideas across food banks, and we're doing all of that.
Egan notes there are a variety of ways people can help feed others who are hungry.
Please consider donating a few bucks or your time. There's volunteer from every part of every community working in every food bank, hundreds of them. One of the things I suggest to people is think about the last time you went out to eat with your family and what did you spend, whether you went out for a slice of pizza or a nice dinner. Think about what that number is. Send it to your local food bank, and it will really do a lot. Second thing is help us out with advocacy. You know, call your state representative or your federal representative. On the federal level, ask for more support for SNAP and for WIC. And on the state level, ask them to support food banks through the Department of Health or through the Department of Environmental Conservation. We have grants with both. The third thing, I guess, is the hardest. We live in some really tough times, right? And if you look at the news in the last week or two, there's so much political turmoil, people being shot. It's awful. And I think it's vital in times like this that we don't give in to cynicism. This country's full of a lot of wonderful people. They want to help each other out, and let's all be a part of that.
There's more information about Feeding New York State at wamc.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
There is movement now to assemble a Newburgh Area Committee to offer advice and recommendations to the U.S. Department of Defense on PFOS remediation at Stewart Air National Guard Base. And a local group that formed around that very issue is complaining that they're being left out of the process. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn explains.
Senior-level Department of Defense officials visited Newburgh in April to update the public on their efforts to address PFOS water contamination emanating from Stewart Air National Guard Base. During this forum, they followed up from their first visit in November about a so-called Restoration Advisory Board, which has turned into a Restoration Advisory Committee in the case of Newburgh. The committee is intended to contain diverse members of the community who could provide input into the restoration process. At the April meeting, residents were told they could submit their names for consideration. Newburgh Clean Water Project member Ofra Wolf says she's been trying to get involved since an earlier DOD visit in November. Wolf contends outreach in June for candidates with a deadline did not include her, and that others forwarded emails to her on the subject.
People were essentially cherry-picked and reached out to personally. And we know this because some of these people reached out to us right away to ask, have you been reached out to? And of course we hadn't. So, you know, the good news is that the community is talking to one another.
There was a public meeting July 31st about the as yet unformed committee, and Wolf says she made her viewpoint known. She says outreach in general has been lacking.
You know, what we understood, however, was that this was important because the Restoration Advisory Committee was the offering that the Department of Defense was making to our community as a way of saying, look, this is how we are going to be transparent and inclusive. And what was so concerning was that everything leading up to this meeting that just happened recently was very much lacking in transparency and seemed to be operating really to exclude rather than include the community.
Dan Shapley is Water Quality Program Director for Riverkeeper, which has been involved in the PFOS contamination issue as an advocate for clean water and the community.
Well, Riverkeeper hopes to serve on the Restoration Advisory Committee. We think we can play a useful role going forward in helping the community advocate for itself and get a good cleanup of the site, which will be a multi-year process, even in the best-case scenario.
Shapley attended the July 31st public meeting on the topic of the Restoration Advisory Committee, which is neither a governmental nor military entity, and it has no real power. Shapley says Riverkeeper wants to make sure Newburgh's diverse community is well represented.
To have that happen, the selection committee has to be populated with the right people so that they can make good choices about who serves on the committee. And one of the things we really want to see happen is to have the local representatives of the Newburgh Clean Water Project serve on that selection committee or other individuals who are similarly knowledgeable so that we can make sure that the process is as good as possible and the committee has the best chance of succeeding in informing the community and empowering the community during this process.
A spokesperson for the 105th Airlift Wing at Stewart Air National Guard Base was unable to respond in time for this broadcast. Newburgh's PFOS drinking water contamination was revealed in May 2016.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. At upstate New York, Assemblyman is joining with a state senator on a proposal that would place a moratorium on the annexation of farmland for industrial use. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard with more.
Angelo Santa Barbara, a Democrat of New York's 111th Assembly District, says the agricultural resources of Montgomery County are at risk.
Taking rich farmland in Montgomery County and giving it away for industrial use is just bad decision-making, plain and simple.
Santa Barbara, a member of the State Assembly's Agriculture Committee, is partnering with State Senator James Skoufis, a Democrat of Woodbury in the Hudson Valley, on a bill that would place a moratorium on the annexation of farmland for industrial use. Here's Skoufis.
This provides municipalities with a tool to basically hit a pause button if there is an annexation petition that's being thrust upon them.
Santa Barbara cites past failed projects in the county, a proposed landfill at the Glen Canal View Industrial Park in 1998, and more recently a proposed biosolids processing facility in the town of Glen. Now, the assemblyman says he's gathered 1,500 petition signatures opposing the annexation of more than 260 acres from the town of Mohawk in Montgomery County to neighboring Fulton County, for the purpose of establishing a business park. The annexation proposal includes a revenue-sharing agreement with Montgomery County and Fulton County. A primary purpose of the annexation would be to extend infrastructure from neighboring Johnstown in Fulton County to the site. But a state environmental review of the proposal remains incomplete, and some local officials are joining grassroots efforts to oppose the move. Mohawk Town Supervisor Ed Bishop says it's an issue of local control.
If it got annexed, then the town of Mohawk would have no control.
Montgomery County has seen some significant economic development projects pop up in recent years, including the potential redevelopment of the former Beechnut Baby Food Factory site in Canajoharie and retail distribution centers along Route 5S. In his State of the County address in April, Montgomery County Executive Matt Austinfort, a Republican, said the county should not focus on the Mohawk site.
Pushing that forward and pursuing that project is not something the county needs to do. And especially given the lack of community support and the lack of support, you know, from electeds, I think, you know what, let's focus our energies elsewhere and we'll take it from there.
Despite Austinfort's comments, Santa Barbara is asking the county legislature and county executive for action.
Pass a resolution. Stand with us. Pass a resolution in opposition to this project. Reject this proposal, because this proposal is something that the residents don't want, but it's also something that endangers natural resources and also quality of life.
Andrew Santillo, an economic development assistant for Montgomery County, commented on Santa Barbara's proposed moratorium Friday. In an email to WAMC, he said, quote, "The county's stance is trying to balance our rural character with a need for economic development initiatives. Without seeing the proposed legislation, it would be hard for us to offer any support. However, these are private property owners that requested the annexation, which is well within their rights to do."
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
A new effort has been launched to educate hikers about overcrowding and how it impacts the Adirondacks. The Adirondack Mountain Club, the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Colorado-based Center for Outdoor Ethics are partnering to educate hikers about Leave No Trace, principles to help address overcrowding in the High Peaks region of the Adirondacks. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was at the launch of the initiative.
At the Adirondack Mountain Club's Adirondack Lodge near Lake Placid, there are often more cars than available parking spaces. And that's true at most of the parking areas in the High Peaks region, leading hikers and tourists to park on nearby roads. There has been an effort this year to crack down on illegal parking and divert hikers to less used areas of the Adirondacks. The Heart Lake Trailhead at the Adirondack Lodge may be the busiest in the Northeast, according to Adirondack Mountain Club Executive Director Neil Woodworth. As people passed by to begin their hikes, Woodworth noted that one of the most important things that can be done to address overcrowding is educate those exploring the High Peaks region.
If we're not careful about how we manage people and educate people, we can accelerate trail damage, we can harm very fragile alpine vegetation, we can pollute our streams. And so education really is the key here.
The Leave No Trace program from the Center for Outdoor Ethics is aimed at educating hikers. Leave No Trace Outreach Manager Mitch Warnick explains that the Adirondacks has been designated a hotspot, an area experiencing severe impacts from overuse.
The Hotspot program is our flagship program where we work with select parks and protected areas that are experiencing extremely high levels of recreational impacts. And we work with the stakeholders and community to strengthen the stewardship efforts through trainings and workshops and service projects and other public events to further implement Leave No Trace and better the landscape as a whole.
The Adirondack Leave No Trace effort is being coordinated in partnership with the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation. Region 5 Director Robert Stegman says DEC has been trying to address overuse for some time.
We can't do this alone. This has been going on for decades, and we've got to a crescendo now. We have a lot of people who come up here, they fall in love with it, but they don't have the knowledge to take care of it. And this is what the education and outreach is all about.
There are seven principles to Leave No Trace, and over the course of a week, Subaru Leave No Trace traveling trainers Monica Baumgart and David LeMay will offer workshops and be on the trails to interact with hikers.
During the Hotspot Week, we are offering a variety of workshops and trainings.
We'll also be participating in some trailhead and summit outreach where we interact face-to-face with people who are actually on the trails and at the summit. Where we'll have education material that we can hand out and just have those discussions, because through our research we've shown that being able to have those face-to-face discussions really makes a big impact on the user.
At the end of the lodge's parking area is a trailhead with a constant stream of hikers. Wilderness educator Andrea Burgess of Honeoye, New York, went to Paul Smith College in nearby Franklin County, but it has been some time since she's hiked in the Adirondacks. She has mixed feelings about the increased numbers of people coming to the high peaks.
One, it's best to get people out to be able to appreciate and conserve and take care of. But two, more use is maybe more pollution, more wear on the environment. So am I concerned that there's more people? There's always going to be more people. But, you know, no, I guess not overly, as long as, you know, they do become educated.
The Leave No Trace principles include plan ahead and prepare, dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, respect wildlife, and be considerate of other visitors.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1933. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.